This is Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Joss, and I've got an episode of Nutty Bites for you today. Today, we're going to be talking about Cobra Kai. And with me today, as always...
Hi, I'm Tech.
And we've got two guests that you have heard before, some longtime guests. We have our brother from over in the West Coast.
Hi, I'm Sonorous Vox, formerly known as the Zero Killer, the man of empty promises.
Yes. And another epic guest. Get it? Epic guest.
Wiki Feef.
Oh, God.
My name is Mark, formerly known as Mark from the other show.
To the three people who remember Epic, they're on this podcast right now. That's not fair.
That hurts.
But factually accurate.
Yes.
Mark,
yes.
Good to have you back on the Nutty Bites podcast.
It's a blast. I absolutely, we used to record every other week together, and it's been a long time, and we have not been recording every other week. So it's great having you back. And we've all watched Cobra Kai.
Yes.
And FaZe has watched some of that and thinks he should be on the cast too. So I'm just going to start with, I have watched every Karate Kid movie. I watched them when they came out. I watched all of them, including the next Karate Kid and the Kung Fu Kid. I don't care that it was released as the Karate Kid in the U.S. It is more aptly named the Kung Fu Kid, which is how it was released in China. Big longtime fan. And when I heard Cobra Kai was coming out, I was really excited, but I was not willing to pay for YouTube Premium. So I had to wait till it got to Netflix. Tech.
I think I saw the first three movies. I don't know if I saw the one with the girl or the one with Will Smith's son. I was a huge fan of the original movies when they came out as a kid, and they were some of the big influence that got me into martial arts a little later in my life. I am a huge martial arts fan, always have been. I was also a bullied kid, so this trilogy, especially the original movie, holds a really special sort of place in my heart because I thought I saw messages, and I'm going to talk more about this as we go through the podcast, that I really thought I saw more in that movie about how a bullied kid could overcome bullying. And now that I'm an adult and I go back and I watch that original movie and I see that Daniel-san is maybe not as squeaky clean as we want him to be in that first movie. And that's what I loved about Cobra Kai. It's there is no black and white in reality. There is no black and white in this show. Everybody is multiple shades of gray.
Yes, yes. Sonorous.
Yeah, so I have, I'm pretty sure at some point in time I have seen every single one of the movies, although as with many franchises, there are a few of them that I have completely blanked out of my memory.
We discovered that last night when you blanked out Screamers.
Crawlers?
Yes.
Crawlers.
Yes. The donut movie. Yeah. But like I have good memories of it. Of the original movie, especially, I've watched multiple times over the years. And Cobra Kai was a fantastic nostalgia trip for a mid-80s California I never lived in. So.
And Mark, the guy in the hat.
I definitely seen all the movies. I remember the first one almost like scene for scene. Like if I went through it again, you can always predict exactly what's going to happen. The second one, I don't remember seeing, but I was on YouTube and there's some like clips here and there and I watched the clips and like, I remember that. So I know I seen the movie, but I just can't quite remember it. And, the one with Jaden Smith, I saw it. I didn't give a crap about it at the time. I don't give a crap about it now, to be honest. I didn't like it. And I don't think it has any bearing on Cobra Kai anyway, so whatever.
Well, except for one of the executive producers.
But storyline-wise, canonical-wise, I don't think it really has anything to do with it.
There's also another movie that I think I need to add into the canon.
Yes.
Is the documentary.
The Real Mr. Miyagi.
Right, called The Real Mr. Miyagi, which is the story of Demura Sensei, the advisor that they brought in to teach the martial arts that they used in the movie, and as well... Pat Morita's stunt double.
Mm-hmm.
So that scene when he beats up the Cobra Kai guys in the skeleton suits out back, if you look really carefully, you'll see that the guy's a little shorter and a lot stockier than Pat Morita, because that's Demura Sensei. And he'd been doing martial arts demos since the end of World War II in California. He's the guy that brought
Japanese karate to California. Cheers to Rory and Hydrate, and a big cheers to Demura Sensei, because without him, we wouldn't have Japanese martial arts in North America.
Yeah, he's the one that started the whole demo thing.
The whole thing. Like, Bruce Lee would not have had a place to start had it not been for guys like Demura Sensei. Absolutely amazing story and really important to the movie.
Fair warning. The students that talk about Demura Sensei have elevated him to almost godhood, so you have to understand that there is a bit of that, and that happens. But what I also really liked was that Pat Morita modeled his Miyagi voice and mannerisms after Demure. So there was even a scene where at Demure Sensei's birthday, he says that he's, you know, after all his life in America and acting and training, Demure taught me how to talk like this. and that, you know, it's not Pat Morita being insulting. It's him doing someone
imitating. Yeah, he's imitating someone. Because if you ever hear Pat Morita's stand up, I mean, his voice is very white passing. He grew up in California, and he does not have a trace of an accent, and then he has to put it on. And you know, if you go back and watch his performance as Mr. Miyagi now, it seems it's like one step away from Mickey Rooney's big buck teeth flapping Dickie miso solly routine. I mean, it's pretty bad. And then you realize that he's doing an exact interpretation of an actual Japanese immigrant. So,
and
now
you
see
that person talking, and you go, oh, okay. And if you haven't seen Pat Morita's stand up, just watch old episodes of Happy Days. He's Arnold.
Right.
It's interesting how the quintessential character can then become the stereotype just through popularity like that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But that leads us to Cobra Kai.
Well, I was going to say one of the themes in the show that I don't think I thought about too often until now, Nutty just kind of touched upon, is the veneration of somebody for being a sensei. Mm-hmm. It's that borderline between having deep respect for somebody and putting them too high on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. And interaction with Kreese, where he still has such an impact on Johnny's life, even though he was a very negative influence, he still has this venerated status, is one of the central kind of themes of the show, but one that goes kind of unnoticed for the themes of bullying and standing up for yourself and things like that, that are more central.
So what's really funny about that, and you're absolutely right, but this is a North American thing. Because when Nutty started off in her martial arts career, and she had had dealings with this one particular teacher, other people in the middling ranks would go up to her and say, "You can't talk to him. You're not allowed to talk to the master." It's like, why? He teaches at my school. Like, I know him.
Okay. Yeah. So when I started out in this school, which is a chain of schools that we're not going to mention the names of, because Nutty has had some good and bad experiences there. I was tested by this master, who was not, you know, the head of the chain or anything, but he was one of the masters. And in order to get tested, you needed to be tested by a master. You couldn't be tested by your sensei. It was a whole thing. And later on, when I switched dojos and so forth, and I saw him somewhere, you know, many years later, and he talked to me, there were senseis who were like, How do you know this guy? How do you know this guy? And it's like, oh, well, he graded like most of my tests. Yeah, I know him pretty well. But yeah, it does get to that point where it's like, you can't even talk to certain people in these organizations. And, I think what I really liked was when we got to the tournament at the end of season one, you really saw that there was like this line of, oh man, was it the jiu-jitsu moms? I was like, oh, I don't want to get stuck with the jiu-jitsu moms. Oh. And that's exactly it.
But my point in all of this is that you see this in North American martial arts. And everything in Cobra Kai, all the martial arts that we see are North American derivatives of traditional karate. There is no, as much as he wants to claim that Miyagi-Do is a traditional Japanese martial art, not the way he's doing it, it isn't. But bad high guards. Again, for some reason, we can't do a high guard in a North American TV show about Japanese martial arts to save our lives. And I don't know why. But, you know, Nutty and I belong to a traditional Japanese martial art, and we have met many of the senior teachers. And while you approach them with a sense of respect, and you always do, there's absolutely nothing preventing you from walking up to a senior master instructor, 8th degree black belt, and saying, "Hi, sir, how are you today? Nice to meet you. I am a schlub. I am a 2nd degree black belt piece of trash, not worthy to you know, soften the ground under your feet. But how are you today? Would you like a beer? Here, I have one for you." You know, and then an hour later into the party, everybody is well lubricated and having fun and on a first name basis and talking to each other. And the next morning on the mats, everybody's hungover and everything's forgotten and we carry on. But this whole veneration, this whole deification of senseis and this whole deification of black belts as a whole, this whole idea that, oh, a black belt
over
has
there,
to
black belt.
It's a power trip. It's a cult of personality thing, which is very central to the foundation of Cobra Kai itself. Mm-hmm. It is the cult of John Kreese, which gets exposed on several levels in interesting ways throughout the evolution of the series.
Yeah, it's so, like, oh, you could learn karate, or you could learn karate from a Delta Force Green Beret Vietnam veteran. Because that makes it more real and that makes it better. Well, no, it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And anybody that trains like black belt, it's nothing.
the term for black belt in Japanese, and I've mentioned this before, I'm going to mention one more, then we're going to move on to another topic, but the term black belt in Japanese is shodan, first level. A black belt just means that you've learned enough of the basics that they can actually teach you a martial art. A black belt doesn't make you deadly. A black belt doesn't mean that you have to register your hands with the police as lethal weapons. A black belt doesn't mean anything other than you are now ready to learn.
I mean, even the rent's too damn high guy was a certified karate black belt master.
and for clarification, I am a shodan. Tech is a
Nidan. I have a 2nd degree black belt in Yoshinkan Aikido, which gives me the right to do nothing.
You can make brown belts.
I can make brown belts. I teach.
I can make green belts.
I teach.
I showed up to 3 different kung fu lessons. And,
there you go.
And six sessions of Taekwondo as a kicking bag. So I'm qualified for next to nothing.
Well, we'll say that my rank is much higher in Aikido than it ever was in karate. But I did train in karate for 4 years.
I think I reached black belt in Taekwondo when I was, I don't know, like 13 or something like that. You know, basically, I would definitely not lean on that training to defend myself in any effective way. That's for sure.
A martial art and a fighter are two very different things. And you have some of the best martial art training programs in the world that produce mediocre fighters, and you have some of the best fighters on the planet that aren't trained in any particular style. They just happen to be very good fighters. We have to be able to separate the fighter from the art. And you cannot take... It's not like I can take anyone off the street, train them in Krav Maga, and make killers. It's not like I can take a... There is no one martial art on the planet that will make you better than your genetic composition. If you are not an aggressive fighter-type personality, or you're just blessed with a nervous system that gives you a glass jaw, like me, then you're not going to do well.
Yeah, well, it's not every martial art system can produce a hawk.
Yeah, well, actually, some of them can. So there is this idea that, like, oh, I took a couple of classes and now I can kick butt. It just really makes me laugh. There is no rank or structure, really. I did like the one thing we get in season 2 where it's like, okay, you think you're tough, we're all going back to white belts now. And that can be a really helpful thing because... What I can't remember the Japanese, but beginning mind is one of them. You know, there's no mind, that which is
that Mushin?
Mushin, Yep. And then what's the beginning mind? I forget what it is. There's another concept. It ends with Shin, and basically it means you bring yourself back to white belt and you approach everything as if you're a beginner.
Yeah, the only difference between a master and a beginner is that a master has failed more times than the beginner
has even tried. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I have mastered many things in my life.
Oh, absolutely. I am the master of failure.
But this, go ahead.
This show, this Cobra Kai show, so it starts off as a heavy nostalgia trip. And we get reunited with Johnny, played by William Zabka, who was the bad guy of the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny's a complicated person. Johnny hasn't had a lot of things go right in his life, and he's now a washed-up handyman in his 40s, watching his life go apart. And the good guy of the movie now has everything in his life. He's a millionaire. He has a chain of car dealerships. He has a karate school. He kicks the competition in these annoying local car dealership ads that we've all been flooded with, if you remember TV in the 80s and 90s.
Kicking the competition, does that remind you of Jim?
The Hammer Shapiro. The greatest lawyer of all time. I used to get WDIV out of Detroit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There was one, it was these two fat Italian guys and their fat Italian mom. And it was, come on down to Irondequoit Dodge. And this is not sponsored by Irondequoit Dodge, but if you'd like to sponsor us, I'm listening.
I'm not.
I will. You know what? I think a Dodge Viper would look really nice in that driveway down there, wouldn't you?
So one thing, though, that I think there was a slight misconception in there. In the beginning of the series, Daniel-san does not run. LaRusso doesn't run a karate school.
No, right. No, you're right.
But he is riding off of the coattails of that one accomplishment, that one championship, in the truest way of, well, two championships, but in the truest way of. It's kind of an inversion of where, you know, the jock is riding his football accomplishments.
Right. Still wearing his Letterman jacket into his 40s. Yeah, that's exactly what Daniel-san's doing.
It's the good old Al Bundy, you know, that one football game that went well for him kind of thing. But he's doing better by himself.
The thing that makes me laugh is because I do have the background in karate and I've seen championships or tournaments or whatever you want to call them. This All Valley Junior Championship. I have never been anywhere where it was just juniors and it was only teenagers. You know, this mixing of ages and sizes and all of that into one, and there's no adult competitions. Like, it just seems laughable.
It's a full contact, you know, a full contact karate sparring championship with no weight classes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of thing where you see Cosmo Kramer jumping in and kicking children's butts.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But you know, you got somebody the size of, you know, Johnny's got a good 4 inches on Daniel-san in that movie and a good 30 pounds on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, when I first started watching the show, one of the things that kind of struck me almost immediately was just how much of an impact this small tournament had on this community. I mean, years later, in order to ride off the popularity of that victory, it had to have been a big deal to spark. I mean, he's using it as a commercial for a car dealership for the locals. I mean, it has to have some recognition in order for that to work. And it's been like, what, 20, 30 years and people still remember it. It must have had such a huge impact at the time, but that's kind of juxtaposed against the little bit later. Are we going into spoilers, by the way?
We're going to spoil this. If you are listening to this, and you haven't watched season one and season two of Cobra Kai, you might want to go, finish watching those before you listen to this. Quick synopsis, watch them. They're really good. Or a quick review is watch them. They're really good. It's complex and deep.
But it was juxtaposed against the idea, like later on, you see the inner workings of the Hill Valley Championship. You see the board of directors or the
that just wants blue mats.
Yeah, he just wants blue. Like it's such a mundane thing once you see in the background. Like, you know, you kind of envision it like these masters being all zen somewhere and organizing it and, you know, being above everything. But no, it's just a bunch of, you know, people from the community trying to put on an event like they normally do, kind of griping about what now, type of appetizers are going to be there. And
we've worked on a committee before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Together.
Together. And I can tell you, there is that one guy that just wants blue mats.
And the rest of us just don't want to listen to him.
So, I think part of the reason that LaRusso was able to rally that victory into a championship, though, is because, or into a career, is by winning that championship, he kind of stepped away from Racina, the small little kind of lower middle class area, or the lower class area that he was in after coming from Jersey. He was able to step into what was obviously a club run by a lot of rich people. That tournament wasn't being organized by just any parents. It was all of the parents of the well-off, my child is in seven different activities and they're going to go to the fanciest of schools and they're going to go to Harvard eventually. Like that was a very, rich community, well, and he stepped into it by winning that championship, because his family by no means had that.
No, that and they really played. You know, he's from Jersey. His mom moved to find a better job. There is no dad. You know, they were in that really crummy apartment with everything that was broken, and that's how he meets Mr. Miyagi, who's the handyman in this apartment complex. You know,
By the way, broken father figures, definitely a theme that they have taken from the movies and just kept on running,
really.
Both seasons of this, and they treat it really well, actually. Because
I agree. By the way, Guthrum's in the chat saying that yes, individual schools will have tournaments where there's no classes based on age or gender or anything like that, but it is for juniors, so I was thinking more of like big regional, especially when you're mixing different types of martial arts. You've got karate, you've got jujitsu, you've got taekwondo all fighting together. It's
well, the other surprising thing is it, you know, if it's contact and you're just doing like point sparring and you're wearing gloves and pads and helmets,
and that's
one
thing.
But when you're in a full contact, like Kyokushin style rules, you know, no punches to the head, but kicks to the head are allowed.
Yeah.
Type, a body bag.
Yeah.
Like full on contact, you then have to start. Then the only way that those contests are going to be accredited and licensed is with the approval of doctors to make sure that the fighters are safe.
And to be fair, any of these tournaments I wore pads. So,
If we're going to deconstruct the fighting and the martial, the training and all this stuff, we need to talk just for a second about the fact that they all become like Jackie Chan experts in the course of a single montage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did they even have a montage? I don't even know. I think
they
had
a lot of montages.
But
I don't know if they had a
particular, even when like the second class comes in, if I want to call it that second wave of students, it's just like, one day they're all goofy, you know, can't defend themselves or whatever. And then, I mean, Hawk shaves his head and he's instantly a super fighter that's able to take anybody on. I understand why they did it.
In like fairness, between seasons, Hawk got jacked. So,
like suspension of disbelief aside, if you're going to make a show focused on martial arts, there should be somebody on staff that can at least teach the actors how to make a proper fist.
Oh, yeah.
But
there was one person, and they even talk about making a fist properly.
But
and then later on, his daughter makes a bad fist.
But then, you know, like fighting stance, and she goes, with bent wrists at a 90-degree angle, striking. That's a great way to ruin your hands, and you'll never fight again.
Strike with the femur.
Yes,
whatever that is.
Tibia, tibula.
I mean, they had a martial arts expert there. They had Ralph Macchio.
Oh, God. So that's one of the things. So I did look up that they did have a lot of black belts and dancers as Cobra Kai students, but none of them are really the named students because they hired actors first, and I get that. But Ralph Macchio has not learned to do better kata since the movies. Nobody's really learned to do better things. But you know what? Even as martial arts people that are, you know, people that train, I think we were both able to let that go, and we just kind of MST3K at any time it pops up. I will say, I think my favorite thing is that first fight Johnny gets into, and he kicks somebody, and then after he goes, oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
But this whole idea that, you know, in order for martial arts, there's this attitude among film producers that mm-hmm. in order for martial arts to be interesting for the layperson to watch, it has to be spinny kicks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And big throws and all kinds of grandiose things. And that if it's not that, it's dull. Yeah. Well, I will cry balderdash to that and say that there have been some very, very good movies that show martial arts that are not flashy, Black mm-hmm. Panther being one of them, because mm-hmm. they, you know, get down into the ground and do some good old ground fighting. It does not need to be flashy spinny kicks and all kinds of things in order for it to be appealing to a mainstream audience. What matters is drama. And with camera work and with proper acting, you don't need to have an entire staff of black belts working with your actors, you know, trained fighters actually fighting. But you don't need, there needs to be, I think it needs to be elevated a little bit more. I mean, the kids in the Cobra Kai dojo wearing uniforms that don't fit with their sleeves going up over their knuckles, doing really bad drills. The Miyagi-Do students doing, I mean, it's supposed to be Goju Ryu karate, but they can't even do a basic kata.
Or the fact that they keep training without gis, and I get it, you know, if you're a beginner student, you're going to train without a gi, but apparently the more advanced students are training without gis and in, like, leggings and stuff, and I'm sorry, a gi is the most practical workout equipment ever. It is so much better than leggings. Leggings, you're constantly having to readjust.
So, on the subject of you don't have to be flashy to win fights too. I think the greatest character in the entire series proves that. It proves it with intelligence and some crazy camouflage skills will win the day, as Stingray proves.
Stingray.
Stingray.
Like, Stingray's the epitome of the Cosmo Kramer. I'm just a dude who's way too old to be doing this, showing up to a kid's dojo.
But he used like, brain instead of brawn. I love that. I really like that. I know they're doing it for comedic effect.
Yeah.
But I really like that.
That would be me. I mean, I wouldn't win the fight on a straight up, like, actual plane of combat. I would be the guy that snuck the victory in like a jerk.
But would you host a party and invite a whole bunch of teenagers to come over and drink at your mom's house?
No. I mean, Stingray on many levels is a problem. Yeah. The fact that his entire identity gets molded after basically like parroting a teenager style, like the fact that he had to go, like, I'm not cool enough to be just me. I'm gonna do what the Hawk did and become Stingray.
Well, he's the Matthew McConaughey character.
Yes,
isn't he? He's the guy that never let go of high school. He's like midway through his 20s. All right. You know,
I think you're being charitable by saying midway through his 20s. But yeah,
nah.
So speaking of ages, interesting fact. Ralph Macchio was older than Pat Morita was when Cobra Kai started, as compared to Pat Morita in the original Karate Kid. And Ralph Macchio was 22 playing that 17-year-old way back then.
Really?
Yes. Oh,
skinny kid.
And his daughter, Sam, is the actress playing Sam, was 22.
Is she really?
Yes.
Dude, when I watched the second movie, I remember thinking to myself, watching Ralph Macchio on screen, the dude looks like a child. He's trying to play a teenager, but he looks like a child. Now you're telling me he was actually older than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the girl playing his daughter, I mean, I pegged her for 14, 15 tops.
The first season, we couldn't figure out her age.
So apparently Stingray, though, as a character, is deeply into his 30s.
Oh,
ick.
And still thinks it's appropriate to hang out with a bunch of high school kids, double fisting taped beers to his hands.
Oh, the fact that
cold hands. He was doing cold hands.
Well, Edward's 40 hands is the name that I know.
I thought it was
something cold hands because we used to put like ice cold beers and you had to drink them all before you can have your hands out and your hands would go numb.
Wait, you guys actually did that?
Yeah.
I will say I want to get Stingray's beard going on with the
agree with Guthrum in the chat there. Aisha is the best character. I think we need to do more of Aisha. Absolutely.
Remind me which one she is.
That's the Cobra Kai girl from season one. She was best friends with Sam. Her dad's a linebacker.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of segues over to the beauty of the fact that they had a bunch of different varied characters that all were bullied for other reasons. Mm-hmm. Like characters that were very bullied for different reasons, but all banded together into the motley of fools that was Cobra Kai. They had some phenomenal characters in this show, that weren't Stingray.
So I just want to say one more thing about Aisha is as a woman in martial arts, I saw a lot in Aisha that I had experienced. And there's that scene where she's talking to Sam at the end of season one and she says, you should get back into it. She goes, even if it's not Cobra Kai, we need more women. Mm-hmm. And it is so true. And I will say that, you know, when Aisha walked in and it was like, oh, girls can't learn karate. It sounds so outlandish, but
not girls. Babes.
Babes.
Oh, babes.
Even worse. There were specific dojos or groups of people that I had encountered when I was in karate that the sexism was strong. And one of the things that I liked about Yoshinkan Aikido is that there was no gender on the mat. And I think that Aisha's character, you can see that it is not a... There's no gender in her mind. There's no gender in the mat. And I love that they were able to turn Johnny's ideas right away. And he changed his mind rather quickly. I think one of my favorite things about this show is watching him evolve.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to point that out and actually wonder if we could talk about that a little bit. Johnny, his character, they take a lot of his, old styles of thinking.
Neanderthal. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know what Facebook is. He doesn't know what the internet is. He doesn't own a computer.
Doesn't understand YouTube.
But they wear it on his character's sleeve. Like, it's not, it's just a guy who is literally from a different time and never left it. And now he's trying to better himself and he's looking at this new world and he's trying to conform to it, or not necessarily conform to it, but learn from it. And
a squeal?
Yeah, it's not like he's like, oh, this world, how could it be? You can't let chicks in error. He's actually kind of opened up to it, opened up to bettering himself, and he's trying to move forward the best that he can, given his situation. And I think that's really, really wonderful that they're doing that with his character. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, we have Danny, who is kind of real progressive, but he's maybe not as squeaky clean as we think he is. So we have this Johnny guy. So we start kind of where we left off, where we have our hero and our villain, but our hero's not quite the hero and our villain's not quite the villain. And they're kind of over the course of two seasons, they've been moving closer to each other. Now, that kind of brings up something else I want to talk about, but I'm going to put a pin in that. But, going back to Johnny and, Danny, I mean, what do you guys think about that whole situation where you're taking the big hero of the movies and you're kind of saying, well, maybe not so much. And you're taking the clear villain of the movies, you know, in the typical 80s dichotomy that you had to have in those movies. And you're turning that on its head and you're kind of re-exploring that. Like, what do you guys think about that?
I love it.
Yeah,
I think it needs to happen more. I'm so tired after 15 years of Marvel movies where the good guys wave the American flag and they're the good guys because they're the good guys and the bad guys are the bad guys because they're the bad guys. Yeah. And there is no gray. I love the idea that tinted by the glasses that they're wearing, looking at each other, they hate each other. And there's that scene in the Mexican restaurant where they get seated at, you know, they're on a date, they're on like opposite dates and they get seated next to each other. And all of a sudden they start talking to each other and they realize that they really have a lot in common. They actually could be really close friends. They actually could do a lot of things together, but they've had such a tainted and toxic relationship mm-hmm. that they can't see it.
I mean,
and, you know, Danny is nowhere near as squeaky clean as he thinks he is. And some of the decisions that he makes are absolutely stupid, but he thinks he's doing them for the right reason. I love that scene where they're like, and they think that the music I picked is cultural appropriation? That was Mr. Miyagi's favorite song.
I love that. I think the whole flipping the script is what makes this show so good. And for a long time, people have noticed what Tech noticed a few years ago in rewatching The Karate Kid, that Daniel-san, yeah, he got picked on and beat up, but he was picking at it. He was like playing pokey chest. He was the instigator. Whoa. He was not keeping his head down. And he wanted to learn karate so he could fight back and, you know, beat up Johnny and get the girl. Like, he really did have those clear ideas. But also what I like is, and what Mark talked about, how, oh, Daniel looks like the progressive one. And that's something that we see a lot where, just because somebody appears one way doesn't mean it's like that secret gross values. I'm not going to put a specific one because I don't mean to speak specifically for Daniel-san, but it's like he presents himself as so progressive and so wonderful and all of these things, but he is just as quick to anger. He is just as petty. He is making those baseless judgments and jumping to conclusions based on appearance, just like everybody, just like the people that he is despising. Whereas Johnny, it's a little more innocent. Like, yeah, he went about things the wrong way. But as you go through, you realize it starts out with, my girlfriend and I had broken up that summer, but we had broken up a lot and just got back together. That's what we did. And we all know teenagers like who have had relationships like that. And so as far as he was concerned, they were still dating. You know, it was they were on a break kind of a thing, not really broken up. And so you can kind of see his perspective. And then we get his home life, and it's not we have to feel bad for him because he had a bad home life, but more, okay, so this is where his Cobra Kai identity came from. This is how he fell into that group mentality of, you know, oorah macho stuff came from, because this was his way of escaping that. Okay. And it just gives you more depth and kind of shows that people are just people.
Yeah.
Like, there is no black and white.
So I always got hints in later rewatchings of the Karate Kid as well that the leaving Jersey wasn't entirely for the reasons that were talked about, and that Daniel might have been a problem in Jersey. His anger might have caused a lot of family problems.
Yeah,
so he was definitely not it was almost like a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air kind of thing where, you know, problems in the neighborhood sent him over to California.
Right.
And he showed a lot of that there. He had that capacity always to be there. And it was mentioned in the chat that, you know, how easy is it for bullies to become bullies? I'll admit this myself as someone who was bullied for a very long time. In my later years of high school and in college, I was a dick to a lot of people because I took that bullying that I had been on, had put towards me for so many years. And I finally came clear of it into a group of people that I was the cool kid around for a little bit. And I got a taste of that and started projecting now that I'm cooler than people around me.
Yeah.
Like, I like to say that I am one of the most arrogant, self-loathing people on the planet. I am both things simultaneously often throughout my, or have been both things throughout my life simultaneously in the weirdest way possible. But this show goes to show that, like in Daniel's character arc, it's that he's been corrupted by his own success into becoming, he's become, socioeconomically, elitist.
Mm-hmm.
He is, he's a purist when it comes to karate. If it's not his style of karate, it's not the right style of karate. And there are those elements of like the whole tone deaf nature of, well, this isn't cultural appropriation. I'm sorry, but you're hawking bonsai trees and karate kicks for your entire living right now. Mm. That just because your mentor was from one culture doesn't mean you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And just because you've been to Okinawa a few times doesn't make you Okinawan. Absolutely. And I want to talk a little bit more about how bullied kids can become bullied, or even bullies can be bullied elsewhere and so forth. But also, you know, kind of leaning into that antagonism of what Daniel-san was doing. You know, it's when I say that he was poking and picking on people, it's there is this habit that you're expecting it to happen anyway, so you just kind of want to get it over with. Does that make sense?
I've had to outrun several football players over the years because I knew I was going to get picked on by them anyway. So in front of everybody, I would cut them down for their lack of intellect or whatever I perceived to be a weakness. And it's a common thing. It's all too real to go, okay, if it's going to happen anyway, I'm going to get my licks in while I can.
That's really interesting because if you look at the first scene when Daniel meets Johnny for the first time in the series, Johnny's walking into the car dealership. The first thing that Danny does is he kind of goes up to him and embarrasses him in front of all of his coworkers.
Yeah.
Because you know he's king in that place. Danny is king. Mm-hmm. And he sees the guy who used to bully him, and now he sees a perceived threat to his position on the throne, let's say. So he immediately tries to declaw the threat in front of everybody.
Yeah. Callus can become incredibly thick armor.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this throughout this entire show. You know, Hawk, Aisha, even Stingray to some degrees. That these are people that have been picked and picked and picked, and Danny and Johnny, you know, you've been picked and picked and picked and picked and picked and picked and picked. And eventually it numbs you to the point where you start striking back, and you strike back at a vulnerable target because you need a win. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as it hurts me to admit it, yeah, okay, I've done it too. And I've picked on people that really didn't deserve it. And I have, used that to make me feel better when I felt like I was nothing at all. And that was horrible of me. And I have worked very, very hard to overcome it and do better. But it is very easy for a bullied person to become a bully. As soon as they gain any type of power or anything. And, maybe it's why I was a lot uncomfortable watching this show. Cause it is kind of a harsh mirror. And, then I'm gonna flip it on us a little bit. There were other reasons I was having a hard time watching this show, but did anybody else notice that the writing really fell off about halfway through season two?
Mm.
And that like the writing, especially the conversation between characters, just sort of fell off a cliff. Mm. Now season three is coming out and I'm not very excited.
I'm hoping they can get it back. I think that, and I don't know about the writing per se. I don't know if that changed because Tech, you're the one that told me that one of the head writers was the daughter of the original writer.
No idea.
Okay, then I'll look that up. But that I had looked this up just before we started, that during season two, they realized funding season three was going to be so much more expensive that that's when they decided to make the change to YouTube, from YouTube to Netflix, and that that was one of the considerations. And so I'm hoping now that it's on Netflix, it's going to be, you know, all the people that jump ship because they were like, well, YouTube's no longer paying us. Hopefully it'll be more concise.
One of the things that I've noticed about season two in particular, and I kind of saw it happening in season one, actually, was a typical writing pitfall that I see in a lot of shows. And that's the return to the status quo.
Yes.
So, It usually has, like when I see it in TV shows, it usually has to do with sexual tension between the main characters. You know, will they, won't they? And they got to keep that going because everybody's tuning in to see if they will or they won't. And then one day they will. And now they're a couple. But oh, we got to get them apart again because we got to get that sexual tension going again because that's all we know. So we're going to have them have a stupid, idiotic, out of nowhere fight or just decide for some reason. I've actually seen it happen that, oh, drama, we can't be together. You know, it's better if we're apart. Why? I don't know. Plot dictates that we must be apart. So we're going to be apart and we're going to be really, you know, we're going to be really sad about it. And yeah. And then but you know, it's stuff like that. And the way it was happening in Cobra Kai was the friendship between Johnny and Danny, where they kept playing with it. And I understand having one scene like in the restaurant was really good. They had a nice evening or whatever, but they did it before that. Yeah. And they did that before that with when they went out to the bar together, they had a few drinks. And then they immediately follow it up with something that's got to return it to status quo. And the thing that returns it to status quo isn't something that's been brewing, something that one of them's been hiding. You know, it's just some stupid misunderstanding. It's complete deus ex machina. It's right out of nowhere. It's just somebody goes to knock on the door and hears something out of context through the door and doesn't bother, you know, getting clarification, just walks away and makes up their mind.
The same thing was happening with Miguel and Sam. Like he just saw Robbie and he just made these assumptions.
Yep.
just seeing one little thing and making assumptions, like that would happen over and over again. And this also just shows that Daniel is not living what Miyagi taught him.
Yeah, but to me, it also means that there is some real lazy writing going on.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the conversations between characters. I think there's a lot of problems with dialogue in this, especially among the teenagers, because teenagers don't talk like that. And
yeah,
the like, they need to create tension between two characters. They need to have a fight for whatever plot reasons. And then they pick the stupidest reason they could possibly think of to have these two characters hate each other.
Yep.
And I just, there was an easier way, and it just, it always felt, especially, you know, it's, oh, it's mean girls picking on other girls, or it's a kid picking on the bullied kid. The one character that I really, really hate in this show, and I wish he would die in a horrible, tragic accident, is, what's his name? Something wrong? Steve?
No, I know where you're going.
Waiting to hear who you're saying.
Is Dimitri. Oh my God, I hate this character. He is badly written, badly acted, and so, we've all known a Dimitri in our lives.
Some
and
of us may have been Dimitri.
We
at
may
a
have
time,
been the Dimitri a couple times. Yeah, but I think the character could be done more justice. Yeah.
So, this is the reason I had my indignant face on, is because I was about to cite the interactions between Eli and Dimitri as being some of the better examples of characterization.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. When they're sparring against each other because they're former friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree with you. That was really good.
Outside of that relationship between the two of them, though, Dimitri does weaken significantly because he plays better off of Eli.
Yeah, and I think that Dimitri is a prime example of the inconsistent writing because in the beginning, we learned he's like, no, man, you got to keep your head down. You don't say things like that to people. They're going to beat you up. You just got to keep your head down. And then he's constantly mouthing off to everybody he meets the first time. And it's like, that is inconsistent with your character. I get all the interactions between him and Hawk or Eli.
When he goes to Daniel-san with a note, this is a note from my mom saying that I'm excused all things with labored breathing. It's like, then why are you here? Just go.
Yeah, that's when I would just say go. Because if you're not willing to put in the work, you're not, you know. But the thing is, it's that character, I get the annoying and the socially inept character, but somebody that had made his entire persona around avoiding conflict to then just mouth off to everybody that he ever talks to, that's not what Dimitri would do. Dimitri would just keep his mouth shut and just kind of go, your sensei was really intimidating and I don't think I want to be there because I think he'll single me out.
Yeah.
That's what Dimitri would do.
Speaking as somebody who's been bullied, you'd know better than to go poking at the bear, especially in front of all their friends.
Right. I don't know. That speaks back to the you expect it anyway, so you're just going to start it going. But he was inconsistently written. I think the best realization of an arc with him was when he had a taste of finally starting to get karate.
Yeah.
When in season two, he was starting to understand, he was starting to get better, and they had that mixed party between the two dojos with between the teenagers. That was the one at Stingrays, right? Yeah. And Hawk starts getting in his face, and then he stands up and says, you know, he wet the bed until whenever, right? Like that was where it needed to be, that he spoke out and was finally standing up to somebody instead of all these other times where it undercut the character so much.
That's also Dirty Pool, by the way.
Oh, and it's the perfect kind of thing that Dimitri would do. It's true to character. It's I've been poked at so many times now, I'm going to use the only weapon I know, and that's our friendship.
Speaking of poking the bear, don't you think that Moon and her girlfriend knew exactly what they were doing by starting to like openly make out in that chair in the living room at the teenage party?
That was against Moon's character a little bit too, because she then says like, oh no, like I don't want, you know, this is new to me and I still not sure if I want everybody to know, but they're making out in the middle of a party.
Yeah.
Like it's very strange, weird plot.
That's
armor.
You know what? It made for fabulous television. You know, it is permanently logged into my memory banks as a great scene of TV for some odd reason.
But that's not what's going to happen in your first relationship.
See, I don't even remember that scene. So I remember really? that's the inciting moment that made Hawk get pissed off and go after Dimitri, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I remember it as that. I barely remember anything leading up to it.
The what I was expecting going into season two, because we saw Kreese had come back, which, by the way, I was so excited
about. Oh,
my
God.
All season one, I was like, what do you mean he's dead? I want him back. This is going to be... I thought he was either going to hurt Miguel or hurt Robbie, and that Johnny and Daniel were going to have to team up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't happen, and I was just like, ah. And I'm convinced, by the way, that the character of Kreese is a Bullshito artist, and he actually has no real credentials.
Yeah, Bullshito?
Tech, would you like to explain Bullshito?
It sounds like...
Exactly what it means.
Frittata.
So there are... a Bullshito artist or a Bullshito school, also called a McDojo, is schools that pretend or lie about what they are and what they teach in order to gain profit or popularity or
kinda
students.
Kind of like Stolen Valor, but for martial
arts. Kind of like the ones you would find in a strip mall.
Kind of like in Reseda.
That kind of look like Cobra Kai and call themselves after an animal.
Or they tell you that they can project force fields and knock people away.
Right, exactly. Guys that say that they can knock you out from across the room without touching you, or people claiming that they're...
It's my key.
It's my key. Or that they're 15th degree black belts in a martial art they invented last week. Or guys that guys from South Florida that write books about how they're ninja and they're not. A guy like Kreese, you know, there's very, very, very little difference between a Stolen Valor jerk, but I won't use the term I normally use, and a Bullshito artist, because they're doing the same thing.
Taco.
Yeah. They're... It's the same mental sickness. And guys like John Kreese, especially when you get the big reveal that, you know, he's living at a hostel and that he is, you know, homeless and that his entire history is in question.
Sus.
Right. The fact that he would then bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that whole first season, whenever he said that Kreese is dead, I always mentally took it as he's dead to me.
Right.
It was he wrote himself out of my life by nearly murdering me.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And although they do mention that he faked his death.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that just added to the Bullshito of him. The I'm going to build up my mystique by coming back from the dead. And I was over in the Middle East teaching people to kick taco. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
you know, and he's taco? A big, highly decorated soldier.
Buttocks.
He's this big, highly decorated war hero, yet the epitome of his entire life was this small little dojo.
Teaching kids. So teaching not even kids, teaching right? adults. So
John
kids.
John Kreese is actually a...
is he based on somebody real, too?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He's based on someone by the name... of what I'm seeing is the character is based a lot on a guy named Frank Dukes.
Oh, no. Enjoy your rabbit hole, everyone. Go ahead, Google that.
D-U-X, Frank Dukes. They based the movie
Kickboxer. Hold on, I'm
going to
go... Wait, close my WikiFeed tab here.
Yeah. Frank Dukes. So Frank Dukes is the guy they based the movie Kickboxer on. He was a guy that claimed to be a Delta Force, Green Beret, Special Forces, was all over Vietnam, you know, did all kinds of crazy kick butt stuff for the military, greatest man's man, you know, taught police officers, you know. Did all of this cool stuff, was invited to a super secret martial art tournament called the Kumite, where he won, but he's not allowed to talk about it because it's a total secret, but he killed people and la 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 la. Created this entire, like, cult of personality and mystique around himself. They created the movie Kickboxer, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, after him, because that's the character that JVD's playing. All of these things, and then it comes out a couple of years later that it was all made up. He never served in the army in any capacity. He never went to Vietnam. He was never Special Forces. He doesn't know a thing about martial arts. There is no kumite. He never made a guy say mate. All of it was crap, and all of it was to improve his brand and make his millions.
I think Kreese is more likely similar to some of the other Bullshito artists who, like people with Stolen Valor, a lot of times they actually have real credentials and then they inflate them.
Mm.
It's like they actually did have a black belt, or they actually did serve. But then they say that they did all of this extra stuff. And then they say that they have triple black belt, you know, like the 10th degree or whatever it is. And then they inflate it so much. And it's like, why? You had something you actually earned. Why not just talk about that? Because that's impressive enough.
Well, Tech describes it well as a sickness, right?
Yeah.
It's they get a taste of something. The DNA between the common DNA in this between Stolen Valor people, between Bushido artists, and between the same kind of people who have the get rich quick schemes is a need for validation. And validation for them comes in the form of wealth. And if they have those things, if they have people who love them and they have money, they think they're a better person. And so they get a taste of it through some avenue. And then they follow into that and they go, well, okay, now, you know, I got a little bit of, cause even Frank Dukes did time in the Marine Reserve. So he had some tangential military time. He never served overseas or anything like that, but he had some time and he got a taste of the respect you could get by wearing a uniform.
Yeah.
And then he took that, and instead of dedicating himself to the uniform and dedicating himself to the higher ideals that would earn him the respect, or learning martial arts and dedicating himself to the martial art and earning proper respect, he went, now I'll take the easy road and I'll follow that get rich quick scheme. The I own 10 boats and each of them has 60 bikini models on it philosophy, and go from
my
there.
Garage.
Yeah.
So I in reality, a very easy way of getting rid of Kreese is, okay, he faked his death. We're going to call the cops, and whatever benefits he got out of that, that's a crime. We'll just get rid of him this way.
The six assaults he perpetrates in the opening scene of him being kids.
I mean, we had to go through special training in order to be teachers at our dojo that you have to do in Canada. This is a Canadian thing. I don't know what they do in the States.
No, we had to take the same training that like a camp counselor would have to get.
We get background checks. They do a training. It's like a full day training that you have to go to, things like that. I don't know what happens in the States, but I know especially today, they're a lot more careful with who works with children, right? So we know that this is all, we have to suspend our disbelief, yada, yada. But it's just, we cringe. And the idea that his greatest accomplishment was training juniors. For the junior All Valley.
Johnny, like, you are my greatest accomplishment.
when we see that they don't have belts, well, I guess that works, because really most junior black belts or junior whatever belts, there's no real grading authority. Even if you're through a regular federation, anything that's considered junior often, and I'm not going to speak for all federations or all organizations, but often that doesn't go through the regular council. It doesn't go through regular processes. It's just whatever your sensei has decided. And if you went back as an adult, they're not going to say that you are a black belt. They're going to give you an equivalent rank to start at in the adult class. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but the idea that my greatest accomplishment was teaching kids. I mean, kids are what keep dojos open, by the way. If you don't have a junior program, you're likely not going to be able to keep your dojo open at all. But
parents don't want their kids to learn self-defense. Parents want an hour to themselves.
Yes, absolutely. It's karate-themed daycare
in most cases, and it has very little to do with learning anything. It's more that you can go grab a coffee and relax for an hour, and somebody else gets to listen to them scream nonsensically for a little bit.
That's why somehow, inexplicably, during this time, there is still a karate school open down the street, and it saddens me when I see people dropping their kids off at that place during a pandemic.
We know that is
the worst place to be in a pandemic.
Yeah, we know a couple dojos that have been training, but what they do is everybody's holding a Boken or a Joe, and they have to keep their distance, and they have very specific rules.
It's solo form weapons training.
No combat,
training,
no because, sparring.
You know, when you're holding a 4-foot stick in your hands, it sort of really helps impact that 2-meter spacing, because everybody's whirling around these giant logs. So it keeps everybody away, and it allows you to still get some martial arts training in. But, you know, especially the art that we do, which is a grappling art, you know, maybe
it's
now
always is partnered.
Right, always partnered and always grabbing people and throwing them to the ground and being very close to each other. Maybe now is not the best time.
Nope.
Yeah, but that's a whole other can of worms to talk about. So, Kreese is probably one of the more interesting characters in the whole thing. Just watching but then it brings up the old glory days things where Johnny gets the call from his old from the old boys that were part of the club, part of the Cobra Kai.
I love that they got all
that. And they go on that the same actors, and they go on that road trip for one of their last rides.
Yeah.
So one of the guys named Dutch is in prison and isn't able to make it.
Yeah.
The reason for that is the actor who plays him after The Karate Kid gave up acting and said, no, I don't want to come back for it. He's the only one that didn't want to come back.
Yeah.
The actor who played Tommy, who passed away, actually did pass away after filming. He had a kidney disease.
He was really sick.
He was actually sick with something different.
Did any of you catch the reference, the throwback, when
body
they
bag?
Zipped him up? The body bag.
Yeah. But it's just such a that there now, knowing especially that he died shortly, like after taping, is it's one of the more poignant and touching moments in the entire series.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Because even Johnny at his worst is still a better person than a lot of people around him are.
I just
he still cares about the people that he came up with, even though he knows that he has to be distanced from them because it wasn't good influence. He still can step back and go, hey, we had good times, even though we weren't the best of people. And he's still ride or die with his best friends.
And I love that one of them is a priest.
Yeah. The one who starts the bar fight is the priest.
The one who starts the bar fight is the pastor. Yeah. Now, I loved that scene, but yet again, it fell victim to crummy writing. Because when they all fall asleep in the woods and they wake up and their buddy passed, they all treat it like it's a surprise, and they're all like pounding on his chest. Come on, live, damn it. No, that's not how people react.
I'm not going to call that bad writing. I'm going to call that bad direction.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there would be some, I imagine naturally some insistence on trying to go and trying to get your friend back and trying to, this is just him slipping slightly away. We can bring him back. There's that disbelief in your head there, but it certainly isn't cartoonish levels of reaction.
No. Like, we're talking like 1970s soap opera level of acting here as they tried to bring him back with, you know, defibrillating heart punches. It would have been, Johnny died last, you know, Tommy died last night. Expletives and
crying.
Why did
hugging,
you have to go crying and hugging? And then, well, crack. Guess what I need to do now? Glug, 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 glug. And then everybody just drinking around the campfire waiting for paramedics to show up.
Because they knew he was going to die. Like, that was the whole point.
They could have had, if it wasn't for that scene, they could have had a whole spin-off show about them just doing a biker road trip.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I would have watched it. I would have watched that show.
I think you guys are right. I think that they would have handled that scene more ceremoniously than with like the over the top anger. They could have had like that one last send off as they waited for the paramedics. I think that would have been really, really nice and much more in tune with their characters.
I liked the way that William Zabka acted when he came back from the trip and he goes back into the dojo. And he's like sullen and he's a little bit down and he's very, you know, serious. And was it a good trip? It was a trip, you know. And it was just, I thought that was really well acted. Like his acting to me is like the standout of this series.
Yeah, I think he's really good. And honestly, he's pretty hunky. Like I was never into Johnny. I was never into Johnny in the movies, but so, this older, more
he's more seasoned.
He's definitely more seasoned. Yeah. He aged like Ralph Macchio. Either he aged to look like he has a lot of Botox, or he's been using a lot of Botox lately, which is fine. It's completely fine, but there's just something kind of unnatural about the way that he looks. Whereas Billy Zabka he looks kind of weathered in an appropriate way. And there's something really hot. It's not his muscles or anything like that. There's just something kind of hot about him.
Like I dig when the early handyman scenes were there, when, yeah, you know, you put it on the wrong wall. I thought it was going to devolve into something where he was being hit on by all the women that he had, like, that,
yeah,
he,
yeah, there.
Because honestly, yeah, he's not a bad looking dude, right? But
in truth, that people don't hit on you.
No.
Even if you are a hot handyman, yeah, they view you as the help. Whereas when she shows up for the date, she's like, oh, you're the idiot that put the thing on the wrong wall. And suddenly her date night idea was out the window because he was back to being the help.
Yeah. And
I'm here to put up your TV. God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
It's taking Johnny and making him arguably the main character of the series, because he was the central character of at least the first season, with, you know, Daniel being the antagonist and everything, was probably the wisest decision they made.
Yeah.
Because we know all about Daniel already. And Daniel hasn't evolved enough for us to need to learn more. But the interaction with his stepfather, with Johnny's stepfather.
Oh, Ed Asner. Yes.
Yeah, Ed Asner is that callous donkey. Oh, sorry. Callous jerk.
Potato.
the callous stepfather who's like, you know, I loved your mother, but you're just an accessory.
Yeah.
Like that you're a burden kind of thing. The other interactions, they were fantastic. By the way,
kudos to how they wrote the nurse.
Yes.
She is fantastic.
I'm not your butler. Johnny is also probably the best spokesperson ever for Coors Banquet that you'll ever find.
It's amazing how everybody has a Coors Banquet, like, ready to go.
I haven't seen beer product placement like that since I saw, oh, what was the name of it? There was an African action movie that was legitimately sponsored by Guinness, and it was about, like, reclaiming water rights and giving it back to the people, but everybody drank nothing but Guinness in it.
All right.
And it was like, so, I haven't seen product placement on that level for a beer since then.
There's a lot of really good references. Coors Banquet being one of them. Watching Iron Eagle over and over again. I'm sorry, that movie's awesome.
I actually went back and watched that movie again just because I got nostalgic for it.
I know, right? I see that they're selling those zebra t-shirts again, the baseball style zebra t-shirts, and the music. We can't finish this episode without talking about the music, which is so fantastic. They use so much of the original music and then other music that was of the time, including remaking that one Bananarama song. I mean, hey,
what else is Danny Elfman doing?
That's Oingo Boingo.
Different band. Same guy.
Bananarama's a girl group.
Same guy.
Okay. But we have, like, some really great nostalgia here, and it shows, like, real nostalgia, not cheap nostalgia. Like, these are the touchstones, but it's
how not do we grow, a, how do we hey, evolve? Look over here. Remember this?
Yeah,
remember
exactly.
The time? Remember that happened, and you remember it. No, it's more of a, hey, remember this thing that happened? Let's go take a closer look at that, shall we? Let's go see what was really happening in their heads. Let's see what eventualities came out of these scenes that were throwaway for an 80s movie.
Yeah.
And very by the book formulaic 80s movie. Let's see how that turned out.
And they would take similar scenes shot in similar ways, and then how they would flash back and forth, and then they'd play the same song from the soundtrack.
And that they found unused footage from the original tournaments. They found shot it from multiple angles over and over again when they actually filmed the original. So that a lot of the flashback scenes that we're seeing were not in the final cuts of the movie. They were extra footage from other takes.
Okay.
Yeah. There's even a scene with Billy Zabka's mom in the audience cheering.
Oh.
Yeah. I think that's so cool.
I was kind of wondering what your opinions are on where this might be headed going into the third season. Because we did end up, we never talked about how season two ended.
Right.
This was, it was a pretty big, it kind of came out of nowhere for me. I kind of was thinking that maybe this is how we kind of want to go, where somebody got grievously injured because of this fighting, which is a natural consequence of this type of fighting. Exactly.
And the nature of that injury too, just how visceral it was and how... The visceral nature of it, though, just that, like, I felt that moment. I felt when he landed. And
that was Chekhov's staircase. Like as soon as the fight went into the lobby of the school and they start fighting up a staircase, like, you know, something bad. Yeah.
What was it like watching that with me and all of my belly aching the whole time? I'm like, get off the stairs, get off the stairs.
And it was just,
it was going
to
be bad.
And the whole moments leading up to it, moments after, where Robbie was finally cluing in that he was being the donkey.
Yeah.
And then he kind of, you know, flinched, or Robbie clued in, yeah, that he was being the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And that he had to, he had that moment, right, I got to try and stop this. Oh no, I'm reacting now and things go badly. Mm-hmm. Like that push and pull between the two of them, that was, that highlighted it even worse.
And the fact that you saw that Miguel had learned the lesson of mercy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that was the thing that kind of turned this conclusion on its side, because again, it's kind of going yin and yang for this, or it's going completely against the whole 80s typical formula.
Yeah.
And the 80s typical formula is when you learn your lesson, you have that moment of clarity and you have that moment of mercy. That means the movie's over. That means the slow music starts playing. You get up and in a very, Friday night TV way, you say, you know, I've learned something, and you go into this whole spiel, but not in this situation. It was probably the worst thing he could have done in that particular moment.
Yeah.
But it was still something necessary for his character. With an, in other words, it's kind of like this whole season had been setting them up for failure. And at this point, there was just no escaping the eventuality.
Yeah.
That
first season set him up to be the dark hero. Now you get the fall, right? So,
yeah. And I was absolutely heartbroken to watch this happen. I knew everything was falling apart. I had thought that Miguel or Bobby or Robbie were going to get hurt. At the beginning of the season, I was like, one of them's going to get hurt. I thought it was going to happen a different way. And then to actually see it, like, it just broke my heart. Yeah. And where are we going to go from here? So my predictions or my hopes are that somebody pulls Johnny out of his drunken stupor and realize, you know, and says, look, you may have let Miguel down or feel that you let Miguel down, but there are all those kids that are now going to suffer because Kreese has stolen those kids from you, and now they're going to go out and hurt more people. So, and we need to deal with this. And then his son is dealing with the guilt of what he actually did, and his son's going to need him. So yeah. I'm hoping this is going to be the thing that brings them together, Daniel and Johnny, and that they can work together against the foe.
This is what I was going to say is, it was mentioned earlier that season two seemed like it was setting up for Danny and Johnny versus Kreese. I think season three now will be that season that does that. It's Johnny. I think Daniel will be the one that helps Johnny realize that, you know, yeah, for all the mistakes we both made, we can't lace ourselves with blame over this. We need to build and we need to get rid of the actual threat, which is Kreese, who built this viciousness into you and into all of these kids.
And I think if they are working on the same side and they still have that animosity, I think that'll be comedy gold.
Go ahead.
Season three. Fine, I'll go ahead then. this was your question to us, so I'll let you get the finale here. But season three of a Netflix show is like season one of a sci-fi show on Fox. This is the death knell. After season three is when actors renegotiate for more pay. And I don't think Netflix is going to be willing to do that. I think that whatever ending we get at the end of this season will be the end. I don't think we're going to get a season four because it'll be too expensive.
They've announced season four already.
Have they?
Yes. Yeah. So,
now, mind you, they've announced plans for season four. Whether they're filming it and will continue with it is beyond.
Yeah. So, supposedly they renewed contracts for season three and four.
The other thing is season two-ish is really Netflix's season one. So it would be
because they buy it from other buy it from other people. Yeah.
So.
But who knows how much further this is going to go. But I see the ending of this being very Shakespearean in that everyone is going to lose and then just sort of like sit around and look around at each other and go, huh, what have we really done? And it's all going to go full circle. John Kreese will be exposed as a Bushido artist. And as much as I would love to see the Danny and Johnny versus Kreese Storyline, I don't know. I think it's their students that are going to end up fighting, but I see Danny's marriage ending. I see Johnny's relationships ending. I see the two of them trying to reconcile with each other and that not working for some reason. Kids in jail, kids in a wheelchair. I think the only kid in this entire show that's going to end up on top is Daniel San's other son, because he's done nothing but play on his Game Boy this entire show, and he's the only one that's going to come out unscarred. Huh?
There's a life lesson for you.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, that poor
trying
kid
is the first step towards failure.
That poor kid, like, nobody cares about him. His mom doesn't care about him. His dad doesn't care about him. His sister doesn't care. Nobody, even grandma doesn't care. I mean, it's awful. By the way, I will say I do dig Danny's wife. And honestly, when she's like, what about the dealership? What about the dealership? She's not nagging him. She's like, she's been telling him this entire time. And it took her just being leaving and going, all right, fine. I guess we're doing separate things now.
When she calls
him to wake up.
When she calls a spade a spade.
Yeah.
To like wake him up. They're good scenes.
They're really good.
So
before we go on, I wanted to hear Mark's prediction.
Yeah. So my prediction is kind of in line with yours. I think that Johnny's actually going to join Miyagi-Do. And there's going to be some interesting things that are going to happen there, of course. It's not going to be instantaneous friendship, but they've been kind of setting up a friendship between the two of them for a while now. So if that doesn't finally happen in season three, I'm going to be kind of disappointed. I think Johnny's son is going to go over to Cobra Kai. And that's gonna be the main friction of the series. It's gonna be between Johnny's son and both Johnny and Danny.
That's not bad. I watched that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, or this is kind of where I'm hoping the show will go anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think Kreese is gonna go from an instigator, where up to this point he's been just a catalyst for the plot, because they really haven't taken a close look. They've seen some behind you. You got a peek behind the curtain when he was at the shelter. But you haven't had a good look into his history, what made him the way he is. And I think they're going to try to explore his character kind of the way they did with Johnny's. And they might get a little bit more impassioned towards him. But ultimately, I think he's going to be revealed for the flawed character that he is, the complex character that he is. And through that, Johnny and Danny are going to try to reach him. I don't know how that's going to play out. I don't exactly know what they're going to do with that, but that's kind of where I'm thinking things are going to go. At least that's where I'd like to see it.
There's so much more we could discuss, but we've been talking for a while about this. I mean, we didn't even talk about Robbie's home life growing up with a mom who is only just going into rehab for the first time and who is part of a...
Well, we don't know if it's the first time. We just know that she's going into rehab.
Yeah. It seems like the first time, but yeah.
I do have kind of an interesting possible closer.
Mm. Okay.
Are you team Cobra Kai or are you team Miyagi-Do?
Oh, that's a good question.
I was going to open with it, but I figure this is a better time to address that now that we've talked about
it. Can I be team Miyagi-Kai?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't want to give it a 6 or a 7. I'm going to give it a 6.5. No, pick a side, woman.
False dichotomies, man.
I am Miyagi-Do in the 80s and 90s and Cobra Kai in this century until Kreese took it.
You are responsible for the people in your circle.
Yeah.
So when one of you misbehaves, you all misbehave. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that. So Miyagi-Do didn't steal a Medal of Honor.
That's true.
So I'm team Miyagi-Do.
Yep. Okay. Fair.
I'm team Miyagi-Do, but I'm not. I'm team Miyagi-Do. You know, no, they didn't steal a Medal of Honor. But if you are responsible for your cohorts, they did throw a kid over a rail. And maybe have paralyzed them. So that makes it a little difficult.
Fair.
Speaking of that, we do have one thing that I would love to see in season three. I want to see wheelchair karate.
Mm.
It is a thing.
Yeah.
There is wheelchair martial arts. Mm-hmm. There's an aikidoka out of France. She's amazing. And she can do some amazing work in a wheelchair.
She can use the balance of her opponent and the power of her opponent in such a way that she can pivot and spin the chair without touching the wheels.
Because she still has her hips to move.
But using the combination of her hips and the power of her opponent, she can spin the chair and throw opponents in certain directions without needing to physically move the chair. And that is brilliant.
Yeah, that is.
There's a lot of disability martial arts mm-hmm. out there, and I would just even getting a taste of it, I think, would be fantastic.
So I guess as a recuperative way for Miguel too, because you know that tease at the end of the flatlining was just a tease, because apparently even the season 4 Zoom call he was involved in. So
now you know, it's one of those things that, you know, this show shows us that anybody can take part in martial arts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether you're tall or short or skinny or fat, old or young, and even a girl.
Why are these all about me?
So, I will answer my own question. I'm the opposite of all of you here. Mm. I'm Team Cobra Kai pre-crease influence. I'm Team Cobra Kai in the sense that it was a redemptive. It was a move towards redemption.
Yep.
Even though Johnny was dismissive towards a lot of his students,
he learned.
Even though he was dismissive, he was also the more inclusive group originally, mm-hmm. because he never was. He was. You have to be a killer instinct, but he was not. He was not. You know, that's not karate.
Yeah.
And Miyagi-Do was founded. The new incarnation of Miyagi-Do was founded entirely as an act of war.
Yep.
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 And agreed. So I think LaRusso strayed heavily from what Mr. Miyagi would have taught him mm-hmm. or wanted him to be. And he had his moments where he knew that.
He did in Karate Kid 3.
Exactly. Ah. So I am Team Cobra Kai in this sense, in the sense of the show.
So especially when he realizes that his motto is strike first, strike hard, no mercy. And then mm-hmm. he watches Miguel win that tournament, and then it's, that's not what I taught you. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. I taught you to, you know, win a tournament, not hit a guy in his dislocated shoulder till he quit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between giving it your all and being a bully. And there's no honor. And I love the analogy he uses is there's no honor in defeating something that is weaker than you and never had a chance. There's only honor in taking on an opponent that is as good as you are at the very least.
To be fair, he never explicitly taught them that.
No, he didn't.
Let them kind of draw their own conclusion based on what he was leading them into, and he was not leading them towards that conclusion that entire time. I think he came to that realization and tried to change his ways, but it was entirely too late at that point.
And what I like about this series is we see that Johnny is learning how to be a teacher, because mm-hmm. that is one of the flaws. Just because you think it doesn't mean your students are learning it. One of the things that we teach when we're teaching Aikido is we actually have discipline and etiquette on our testing certificates, like on our cards, because we have to teach that etiquette. This nonsense of students talking back, wearing shoes on the mat, not showing respect, arguing with teachers, arguing amongst the ranks, like all of that is something that we teach. And if you don't teach it, they're not going to learn it. Same thing with
Dimitri waddling up saying, I don't really want to be here. Well, then you don't have to be here. You can go.
Yeah.
I'm not going to teach you then. Bye.
So there's also another reason why I would like to be Cobra Kai over Miyagi-Do. Mm-hmm. It's because at least Johnny does his own handiwork around the place.
Mm. Oh. No, child labor. Although he did have Miguel doing stuff. It's like, so am I supposed to be learning anything from this? Is there any
do you want me to do it? Do you want me to wash this in any particular way? No, I don't care.
I don't care. I do love all of those parallels. So I'm going to ask everybody before we sign off and we get excited about season 3. Actually, before that, I did see some possible spoilers that apparently Hilary Swank may be showing up.
Ah, cool.
Okay. Elizabeth Shue may be showing up.
Oh, they did tease that at the end.
Yeah, when
she popped up on his phone.
And that there may be a visit to Okinawa. So we could end up with the characters from Okinawa showing up. So that could be a lot of fun.
Sensei never taught you to fight with spear.
Yeah.
Hilary Swank will be in Okinawa teaching.
if we could end up with Johnny going to Okinawa, that would be fun. But for a series, giving the series a rating, we generally do our ratings 1 through 10. Out of 10, and we kind of give it a little bit of flavor. So I'll let Tech go first. Tech, what do you rate this series?
you know, it is a wonderful trip down nostalgia lane, and I am having a lot of fun with the soundtrack in this, but it is hampered in my view with some clumsy writing and some clumsy dialogue. You know, kid actors are what they are. They are kid actors, and I'm not overly plussed by some of them. Aisha, I'm looking at you.
I like her. I think she's good.
Well, she's fine.
Your opinions are valid.
But she's not great.
As are mine.
So I just, to me, this would be 6 out of 10 illegal crane kicks.
Ooh. All right. 6 out of 10. That's better than average. Mark, what would you rate this?
You know, the nostalgia factor really weighs in heavily here because it's one of the only nostalgias done well that I've seen in a long time, especially in this age where nostalgia is king. So that being, you know, and the fact that the overall story arc and their approach to it, I love it. That's all 10 out of 10. The detractors, I think, are the lazy writing that I mentioned earlier that kind of creeps up more mid-season than anything. The seasons tend to have a good start and a good finish, but towards the middle, they tend to languish a little bit. And I'm going to say something that's probably not going to be popular with you, but I don't think Zabka's acting is very stellar at all. I think it's passable. It's good. Don't get me wrong, it's good, but he's definitely not A-list material, probably not B-list material either. But
is anyone on the show?
That's just it. Fair. Right? So
Stingray.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, when you figure that so many of the kids on the show are Disney kids.
Yeah, well, even Machio's acting isn't super
what has
great.
He done since My Cousin Vinny? I mean, really.
I suppose, right. There you go. But, you know, given their pedigree, it's pretty good. And given everything else, it's passable. And once you get used to it, it's kind of just there and it becomes kind of almost part of their character. So it's not a big deal. But I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 nachos.
So all right, that, so 7, exceptional. By the way, a 6 on our scale is solid. So,
I didn't know that. No, I didn't know that. Let me break it down.
So here's the thing: is that most 0 to 10 scales are like really 7 to 9 scales, and that no one will budge out of those. So when we say 5 is average, 5 is average. 5 is the middle of the scale. So, 5 is good. I gave a movie a 3 out of 10 once at a live reading, and I had a little girl cry and storm out of the room because I gave her favorite movie a 3 out of 10. So we have to explain our scale.
Yeah, so our scale we stole from Treknologic. And if something gets a 0, it is horrifying. A 1 is dreadful. A 2 is tedious. A 3 is boring. A 4 is mediocre. 5 is average. 6 is solid. 7 is exceptional. 8 is dazzling. 9 is penultimate. And 10 is sublime.
Okay, well, I'm going to give it a solid then.
Okay.
Solid 6.
Okay. Yeah. And I didn't mean to bring your rating down. I just wanted
well,
to give
did.
Extra.
Well, you did. You did, and now it's over.
Well, you did, Nutty.
Well, yeah. Fine.
This is why we can't have good ratings.
So I would give this, and a lot of the things have been mentioned already, but for relatability as well, gets a huge factor in there. The ability for me to look at media and self-reflect is actually a very rare thing these days. Mm-hmm. For me to be able to see a little bit of myself in characters to see myself in characters isn't uncommon, but to see myself in characters and then start thinking and evaluating who I am, that's a little different. To be able to go, man, did I become a bit of a Danny LaRusso? Not necessarily a good thing, but a good thing when it comes to writing. So there's that. And for all its flaws, for all its unforgettable characters, like we didn't even talk about Tori, the second girlfriend of Miguel, in this entire
time. Tori.
Like for all the characters that were forgettable caricatures and existed only to move plot forward and things like that, for all the little flaws, I would still rate this a solid. For me, I'd say it's about a 7, maybe even a 7.5 out of 10 strip mall black belts.
Nice. Well, I'm going to blow all y'all out of the water because I'm not giving it any points because Tech decided to make fun of me for using points earlier.
After we all use points?
It does not matter. You didn't use points.
Well, I use nacho, technically tortillas, but whatever. Yeah.
I really like this, and in spite of the bad martial arts, in spite of a lot of the unrealistic things, I always found enjoyment watching this. I never felt like, oh, I got to watch this next episode so I can get to the good stuff. It was must see TV for us. Like, we went through this in a couple of weeks. We went through the entire series. We're like, okay, we don't want to watch too much of it. We kind of want to save it. And because we really were wanting to enjoy this experience. So this is, you know, we didn't start watching Lower Decks until we watched, you know, the first season of Cobra Kai, because we were just so in it. By the way, I watched Lower Decks. It's really good.
It's safe to say that Lower Decks is 1,000 times better than this.
I really do think that, I might put Lower Decks above, but I wasn't motivated. I would put Cobra Kai over Disco right now in my want to watch list, though. Ooh. So because of that, because it was a I really want to watch the next episode, I'm giving it a higher rating. Mm-hmm. I am giving this 8 out of 10 Iron Eagles.
Ooh. You're crazy.
That is 8 Louis Gossett Juniors.
This is why they call you nutty. This is it.
You've been saving that joke for a while.
I will say, as a small thought too towards the end, I want to live in a world where every issue is solved by random kung fu fights or karate fights. I want to live in this world just to watch it, though, because I would follow the Dimitri school of run away from my problems until throwing them into a trophy case.
Yeah. Now I want to revise my ranking scale and say that it was a 6 out of 10 notes from my mom excusing me from higher ratings.
So that brings us to a 6.9 out of 10 for the entire cast.
Fair. Suitably nostalgic number.
Yes. So viewers, or listeners rather, what did you rate Cobra Kai? What are your thoughts on Cobra Kai? Did it make you think about, I didn't even get into the whole thing about how it helped me reflect on my past as being a bullied kid. You know, what does this tell you about bullying and the situations they're in? Send us your feedback. You can go to the Facebook group. You can email us. You can shout at us on social media. Okay, you can shout at me. Tech is not really on social media much. But please let us know. What are your thoughts? What did you think of Cobra Kai? And what do you think is going to happen in season 3? Before we sign off, I do want to thank all of our patrons. Without all of you, we would not have 2 episodes a month.
And theme music that we swear is coming.
It's coming. It's coming. He's working on it.
I've heard the draft. It's not bad.
We've heard multiple drafts. It is coming. So really, we want to thank all of our patrons for all of their support. We're going to start with Jax. Thank you so much, Jax. Top tier Big Daddy.
Big Daddy.
We want to thank Jason and Rich the TT, our other Big Daddies. And then at that next tier, those artistic tiers, we want to thank Mark. Thanks, Mark. He's sitting right here. Andy, Luke, Lynette, Melissa, who, by the way, has her own Patreon now. You need to check that out at thebathtubmermaid.com. Susanna, the other Mark, the encaffeinated one. And then for all of our other patrons who are just awesome people, thank you to Shane.
Number one super fan, Shane.
Hugh, Cliff, Uncle Monster, Will, Zach Man, Grig, the Radical Geek, Stephen Pritchard, Susan, Harold, Ian, Patrick, Ken, Kinsey, Mike, and Justine. Thank you so much, everyone, for your support. We're going to sign off now, but please let us know, what did you think of Cobra Kai? Bye.
In the distant future, humanity entertains itself with countless hours of podcasts. But the Podosphere is troubled. Corporate networks and true crime shows rule the iTunes rankings with an iron fist. The year is 2019. Our only hope, the Nostalgia Pilots.
Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a podcast that for 100 years has fought the evils of outer space. I'm your host, Hugh.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Jason.
And I'm Spence.
4 podcasters fight back by watching and discussing classic giant robot anime.
Hey, do we have any of those cancers left? You know, the underwater ones?
Yeah.
Thanks. That's what we need in this episode. Is more.
Strap a couple Saturn rockets to it. It'll be.
Their first mission: Toonami mainstay mobile suit Gundam Wing.
Oh my God! You're describing the Spice Girls.
See? You get it.
Suit up at nostalgiapilots.com.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.